Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Venezuela's leader has her own agenda. Spain offers new hope for migrant workers. And the last remaining U.S.-Russia nuclear arms agreement is in jeopardy. First, Venezuela's leader has her own agenda. Ties between the Trump administration and its hand-picked Venezuelan leader, Delay Rodriguez, may be fraying. Trump had said he would run the country. Rodriguez now says, quote, "We are not afraid, nor are we afraid of maintaining respectful relations with the United States, but they must be based on respect. Respect for international law, basic human respect in interpersonal relations, and respect for the dignity and history of Venezuela." Enough already, she said, of Washington's orders over politicians in Venezuela. Let Venezuelan politics resolve our differences and our internal conflicts. This republic has paid a very high price for having to confront the consequences of fascism and extremism in our country. Reporting by the Wall Street Journal suggests that Rodriguez is planning on waiting Trump out, confident that once he's out of office, his unpopular Venezuela policy will be reversed. Her broader strategy, said current and former U.S. officials and the Venezuelan opposition, aims to outlast Trump's focus on her country by giving ground on demands that benefit her, such as allowing foreign investment in oil and other areas, while slow-walking political concessions that would lead to real change, such as releasing all political prisoners. The ultimate goal, says the Wall Street Journal article, is to preserve her position. Trump professes to be unaware of what Rodriguez is saying or doing. He still says she is a terrific person. How long she remains terrific may well depend on whether Venezuela sells its oil exclusively to the U.S., as Trump has demanded, or sells to U.S. unapproved customers, such as Russia, China, and Iran. One thing is certain about U.S. control of Venezuela's oil. The oil companies have the most favorable conditions for investing. Venezuela's legislature gave Trump nearly everything he wanted. To be sure, Exxon and perhaps a few other companies still worry about being nationalized, as happened when Hugo Chavez ruled. But the new legislation in Venezuela gives foreign oil companies operational control, which most likely means lower taxes and a higher percentage of royalties. No wonder Trump is being pressured by Democrats about profiteering from Venezuelan oil sales. Good luck on that. Spain offers new hope for migrant workers. In sharp contrast with the immigration policies of its neighbors and the United States, the Spanish government is offering hundreds of thousands of migrant workers living in the country an opportunity to apply for renewable residency permits. The government of Prime Minister Pedro Sanchez, a socialist, described the measure as critical to Spain's economic future. Spain's Minister for Migration said it would have an impact, quote, "on our social cohesion, well-being, and also on the economy." Figures on the number of migrant workers affected by the new policy are vague. They could be anywhere from 500,000 to 1,000,000. These workers must prove that they arrived in Spain before December 2025, that they have lived in the country for at least 5 months, and that they have no criminal record. Spain's far right, using Trumpian language, says the policy could lead to an invasion. Our third top story, the last remaining U.S.-Russia nuclear arms agreement is in jeopardy. Unless Donald Trump changes his mind, the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty, called New START, will expire February 6. Its expiration might lead to production and deployment of new nuclear weapons beyond the current limit of 1,500 for each side, as well as testing of those weapons. Such steps would spell the end of nuclear arms control, including not just the treaty, but also the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which binds the 190 signatories not to acquire nuclear weapons and binds the nuclear weapon states to move toward nuclear disarmament. Amelia Lester writes for Foreign Policy magazine, quote, "Russian President Vladimir Putin recently suggested that both sides could stick to the rules for another 12 months. But last month, Trump said of the 2010 treaty, quote, "I'd rather do a new agreement, that's much better." But no negotiations are underway, and Trump also hinted last October that the United States could begin testing nuclear weapons again. other news, the Greenland story, far from over. Jeff Landry, the Trump administration's envoy to Greenland, he's also governor of Louisiana, has written an op-ed for the New York Times that tells us the U.S. intends to dominate the island. Quote, "When President Trump took office last year, he recognized an uncomfortable fact that many others have avoided. America must guarantee its own unfettered and uninterrupted access to key strategic territories in the Western Hemisphere, including both Greenland and the Panama Canal. It is no accident that he put those two locations together, since, quote, Greenland fits squarely within the idea behind the Monroe Doctrine for Latin America. Thus, now that a framework for a future deal is supposedly in place for Greenland, the U.S. will use it to, in Landry's words, quote, set the rules in one of the world's most strategically consequential regions in perpetuity. American dominance in the Arctic is non-negotiable, writes Landry. Greenland is a core national security interest for the United States, repeating what Trump said at the World Economic Forum in Davos. That's an extraordinary statement, considering the many other global security interests Trump and his predecessors have identified. And it's a wrong assessment based on Cold War thinking. The Chinese and Russian activities in and around Greenland hardly amount to a national security threat. Contrary to Trump, in a January 9 press conference, there are no Chinese and Russian destroyers circling Greenland, nor are there Russian submarines all over the place. Nor, finally, are there any indications that Russia or China plans to occupy Greenland. But there are Russian and Chinese fishing boats. Nevertheless, the U.S. is going to build more bases in Greenland, establish a Golden Dome missile defense there, build more icebreakers, and vigorously patrol the Arctic waters to prevent a Russian or Chinese takeover. These plans, proposed in the name of national defense, conceal a long-term design on Greenland and especially its mineral resources. Trump conducts economic warfare against Cuba. Following up on Marco Rubio's threats to Cuba, the island's oil imports are drying up. Trump has made sure Venezuelan oil is no longer available, threatening to raise tariffs on any country that might provide it. Cuba's usual sources of oil, Mexico and Angola among them, are being closed down, almost certainly under U.S. pressure. Mexico's President Claudia Sheinbaum insists the decision is a sovereign one and that Mexico will continue to provide oil as humanitarian assistance. But when we consider that Trump has threatened to go after drug cartels in Mexico and that the U.S.-Canada-Mexico trade agreement is up for renewal shortly, it is hard to credit Sheinbaum's claim. Trump has made clear the U.S. aim with Cuba, an economic blockade. Cuba will be failing pretty soon, he boasted. Indeed, by some estimates, Cuba has only about 3 weeks of oil left, after which a humanitarian crisis is being predicted. Diesel is essential to electricity, transportation, water delivery, and agriculture. During the Cold War, the U.S. economic blockade of Cuba was based on Cuba's support of revolutionary movements in Latin America and Africa. Now the pretext is that Cuba is a national security threat because it provides, quote, a safe haven for transnational terrorist groups, such as Hezbollah and Hamas. No evidence has been offered in support of this charge, and I doubt any evidence exists. The U.S. may be supporting Canadian separatists. Last week, I reported on remarks by U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent that suggested support for a separatist movement in Alberta. That support apparently extends to the highest level of the U.S. government, according to an account in the Daily Beast. Very, very senior officials in the Trump administration have had secret meetings with far-right Canadian separatists trying to shake the foundations of the country, the Daily Beast reports. The covert meetings between high-ranking U.S. officials and the Alberta Prosperity Project have met U.S. State Department officials in Washington, D.C. 3 times in the last 9 months, end quote. One member of that project who attended the meeting said, quote, the U.S. is extremely enthusiastic about a free and independent Alberta. We're meeting very, very senior people, leaving our meetings to go directly to the Oval Office, he claimed. The group is hoping to place a referendum on independence on the ballot. But that has not happened so far. U.S. officials deny any support of this movement, but the State Department acknowledges that meetings did take place. The very fact that U.S. officials would engage with Canadian separatists is a shocking level of interference in Canadian affairs, and shows just how far Trump is willing to go with his dream of making Canada the 51st state. Trump renews threats to Iran. Once again, President Trump is threatening to attack Iran. Just a few weeks ago, the threat turned on Iran's reaction to massive protests and the possible execution of protesters. The U.S. was locked and loaded, said Trump. Protesters could count on the United States. But Trump was evidently persuaded by Arab countries and the U.S. military not to attack. Now Trump, having failed to back up his promises as thousands of protesters were killed or jailed, is saying Iran has revitalized its nuclear weapons capability. That's the capability he had claimed was obliterated in U.S. attacks on Iran last June. Trump has ordered the U.S. military to the Middle East, saying that, like with Venezuela, it is ready, willing, and able to rapidly fulfill its mission with speed and violence if necessary. Unquote. News reports indicate Trump is considering various options, including putting U.S. troops on the ground in Iran. Evidently, Trump has become so enamored with the successful seizure of Maduro in Venezuela that he thinks Iran can be easily dealt with. Yet, Trump also says he hopes to avoid the use of force. In short, more gunboat diplomacy. Iran is responding, as in the past, with threats of its own and offers to talk. If the U.S. attacks, Iran says it will respond with attacks on Israel and U.S. bases in the region. But Iran's foreign minister also said Iran was, quote, ready to begin negotiations if they take place on an equal footing, based on mutual interests and mutual respect. As to the agenda, the minister said, quote, Iran's defensive and missile capabilities will never be subject to negotiation. In the past, Iran has also said its nuclear enrichment program is off the bargaining table. That point collides with the demand made recently by Steve Witkoff, Trump's special Middle East envoy, that Iran stop its enrichment program altogether and transfer all its enriched uranium out of the country. The latest news is that Witkoff and, naturally, Jared Kushner are about to meet with the foreign minister tomorrow. Ukraine sees progress in talks with Russia, but huge obstacles remain. Ukraine's negotiators see progress in talks with their Russian counterparts, mainly because the quality of the Russian negotiators is higher than before. Nevertheless, no progress has been made on territorial issues, the status of the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, or security guarantees for Ukraine after a settlement. The Washington Post reports that, quote, officials involved in the talks said Trump was pressuring Ukraine to concede territory before he would agree to signing the security agreement. President Zelensky says the agreement is ready for Trump's signature and that the agreement would have to include a legally binding obligation from the U.S. Congress. The Russians oppose any security guarantees for Ukraine. Its foreign minister said, quote, such security guarantees are unlikely to ensure lasting peace. Finally, some updates. First, from Israel. Israel has always challenged casualty reports by the Gaza Health Ministry, which is run by Hamas. Now, the Israeli Defense Forces have accepted the Health Administration's estimate that approximately 71,000 Palestinians were killed during the war, noting that that number does not include missing people who are potentially buried under rubble. And the number keeps increasing. Over 500 Palestinians have been killed so far in the IDF's ongoing attacks in Gaza. As Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said, the second phase of the ceasefire is merely declarative. And from Myanmar, national elections held in December and January gave the military junta, as expected, a mandate to continue its dictatorship. It supposedly won 80% of the vote, enabling military officers to dominate parliament. Pro-democracy parties were not allowed to run. Aung San Suu Kyi, whose National League for Democracy won in landslides in 2015 and 2020, remains in solitary confinement. Neither of Myanmar's big neighbors, India and China, criticized these sham elections. And finally from Washington, President Trump has put up a picture of Putin in the Palm Room of the White House near the West Wing. Trump thinks Putin looks nice in the photo, which includes the two of them at their disastrous Alaska summit. Now, what does that picture, which is placed above one of Trump and a granddaughter, tell us about Trump's leanings? And that's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening and take good care.